This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
It's Three Man Front here on this Wednesday. Monitoring the radar there in Hoover, trying to get some SEC baseball going. Auburn and Kentucky scheduled to start at 9:30. That was put into a weather delay, as was Alabama in their first game versus Georgia. Eventually, they got delayed again, but Alabama won 5-3. They're going to take on Arkansas whenever we get play out there. But, Pat, we have zoomed in, and you were looking at some of the reflectivity. That applies here, right? On the model. And you're saying they should be getting the field ready and playing baseball.
It's looking pretty good right now, at least for the next little bit. So they need to get the tarp off. They need to get the diamond dry down. They need to get it going, get the players out there, get them warmed up. They need to start playing baseball.
So you're saying Auburn needs to have a big inning.
Just go like Alabama did yesterday.
Yeah, just load up on runs.
Have that first inning.
And then if you play, is it six? You got to have six complete. Isn't that correct? Or is it, I think officially, if you play five full, then that's considered a full game. If, going back to the no contest game with Alabama and Auburn just a couple of weeks ago, and that's why it was ruled a no contest, because you had to have, I believe it was five complete. We'll talk to Jace Goodbread about that in just a moment and talk college football. But how about our friends at Soho Social? Get in this afternoon. Sit on the patio if it's not raining, or you can just go inside to a very big dining area. You're going to have handcrafted cocktails, 3 to 6, half off all drinks and all appetizers. Soho Social in the square in Homewood, and coming soon, Social Taco this summer. Chase Goodbread, talking college football, joining us here on Three Man Front on the Bud Light Hotline. Of course, Tuscaloosa News sports columnist, co-host of Crimson Cover and Talking Tide. Chase, hope you're doing well. It's pretty discouraging, not for Brad Bohannon and the Alabama Crimson Tide. They were able to advance and now in the double elimination portion of the bracket, but it's really frustrating for baseball fans, but also, I'm sure, for the SEC. When you look at this baseball tournament, regionals aren't going to wait for the SEC to finish up theirs. What kind of contingencies could we be looking at, and could we get multiple games on multiple fields to try to squeeze this thing in?
I think if you're the Southeastern Conference, you got to look at every option to get in as many games as you can get in, and you know, if you do have to alter the format somehow, then obviously you try to be as fair as you can to everybody, but you know, it almost takes you back to, you know, if you think about the way the NCAA basketball tournament gets thrown off in the first round, right? Because the late games always end up going off maybe 30, 45 minutes after they're supposed to. Well, when you take the roof off and you let it rain like it can on baseball, that doesn't seem like any problem at all now.
No, it doesn't. Chase Goodbread joins us here on the Bud Light Hotline, Three Man Front. So let's go back 1 week. Last Wednesday, we're just minding our own business. Okay, there's a World Games event going on here in Birmingham. Nick Saban, final question of the night, all of a sudden upsets the whole apple cart in the SEC. Jimbo Fisher has now twice addressed it and just run off at the mouth. Your thoughts on what Nick Saban said, and then what Jimbo said in rebuttal to what Nick Saban had acclaimed and obviously accused Texas A&M of.
Yeah, I definitely, I was there in the room along with a handful of other reporters, and you know, one thing for sure, no one can say, not that this has been alleged anywhere, but no one can say Nick Saban didn't know that it was going to get out or that it was a private event, because not only were there probably at least five or six cameras in there, but Saban's seat, the way he was situated, was kind of pointed right at him. So he definitely knew that whatever he said was going to get out, had to have. And you know, he singled out A&M and Jackson State, which was not a good idea in my opinion, Jackson State in particular, and of course a passing mention of Miami as well, but you know, it's something that, you know, of course, he came back with the apology a couple of days later, but the cat was already out of the bag. And Jimbo Fisher, he kind of came with a flamethrower the next day. And I didn't think Fisher came off looking especially good either. Neither one of them did, frankly. But Fisher, I thought, took it to a far more personal level than Saban did.
Chase, this is so unlike Nick Saban because he's very complimentary, goes out of his way to compliment not only other programs, but be respectful and not say anything detrimental about another coach. So this tells me it was calculated. He was not going to hold back. As you said, he knew who was in the room, who would be filming, and it would get out. There have been reports that maybe there had been talk among his colleagues throughout the SEC and other head coaches that had kind of said, you know, Nick, if anybody says it, it needs to be you. We need to get this out there. Do you have anything else to add to maybe that claim or that report that this was planned by Nick Saban and part of it was the urging of his fellow head coaches in the SEC?
Yeah, so somebody would have to show me some evidence of that. I really don't. That's a little hard for me to swallow. I think Nick Saban, as much as people put on him, as much as people put him on a pedestal as kind of the college football spokesperson for his entire profession, I don't necessarily know that he embraces that quite like people think he does. He was speaking on behalf of his team and his program, not college football as a whole, in my opinion. Now he might have, you know, certainly you'll hear him say that this might be bad for college football as a whole. And there's a good argument that it is. But in terms of his motivation, I still think at the end of the day, he's about his team and he's about his program. And recruiting has been turned upside down. He was the best at it the way it used to be. And it's not the way it used to be anymore. Now it's completely flipped around and there are new players and there's a lot more money obviously flying into it now. And, you know, it's an adjustment that, he's going to have to make if he wants to stay on top because it's not going anywhere.
Chase, in regards to next week, you've heard Jimbo multiple times asked about taking Nick Saban's phone call. Nick Saban has apologized publicly. I know that Nick has tried to reach out to Jimbo. He will not take the call. So kind of take us in that room. We've both covered the SEC spring meetings down in Destin. How do you think that's going to go once they get behind closed doors?
I don't think they're going to need any air conditioning in the room, put it that way. It'll be plenty chilly between those two. And you know, I don't know if you're Jimbo Fisher or Nick Saban, I don't know that you necessarily air that out around the rest of the league coaches and the conference commissioner. I think it'd make for a great movie if there were some fireworks, you know, with every coach in the room. I don't think either one of those coaches is interested in handling it that way. That doesn't mean there won't be some heated debate at the conference table, but in terms of those two speaking to one another directly about what happened last week, yeah, I think if anything ever gets said, and based on what Jimbo had to say, maybe there's no conversation to be had ever. But if anything is ever to be said, it'd be one-on-one.
Chase, based on what you know and the relationship between these two coaches, I know Ryan Fowler, he put out the video of Jimbo waiting over an hour to congratulate Nick Saban after 2018 and winning a national championship. Where could this have possibly gone sour for maybe more for Jimbo towards Nick Saban as opposed to Saban towards Jimbo?
You know, it's certainly, I think you'd have to go back to their days together coaching at LSU. You know, Nick Saban's never been easy on offensive coordinators for sure. He's a defensive guy. So, and he's been, and assistant coaches working for Nick Saban, you know, it's not an easy job for any of them, position coaches included. But you'd have to think for passions to be evoked the way they were, particularly for Jimbo. Like you said, it seems to be more about Jimbo's thoughts on the relationship than Saban's, but it's got to be personal. And I wrote this last week. If you look at the coaching relationships through the course of history that have really gone sour, in a lot of cases, it's two coaches that coach together, right? You know, Phil Fulmer and Johnny Majors, for instance, and you kind of go right down the list. Bobby Knight and Steve Alford. I think I mentioned that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you know, when you spend, when the relationship builds within a coaching staff, and then it breaks off, I think there's a lot more potential for, bad feelings than two coaches that, you know, never were on the same staff.
That's a good point. Chase Goodbread joins us from the Tuscaloosa News. I wanted to ask you about the potential of this SEC-only kind of playoff that they would have towards the back end of a season. That idea has been thrown around. Greg Sankey, he has been quoted as saying that, listen, we've got to be open-minded and anything's on the table next week. What kind of crazy ideas, or maybe not crazy, but let's just say creative ideas that we might hear next week coming out of Destin?
I'll be surprised if that one really has legs. It's a neat concept, and Greg Sankey has said that in terms of scheduling, the SEC needs to kind of think outside the box and explore every conceivable possibility, because they're trying to prepare for 2026. They're trying to prepare for whatever the college football playoff may look like when this current deal expires, which of course is a four-team format that we're locked in now, I believe, through 2025. So I get it that if you're the SEC, you need to explore everything, but I would be absolutely stunned if they ended up doing an intra-conference playoff. Just can't see it. But that being said, you know, they're going to look at a lot of different things. I think, in my opinion, the 9-game conference schedule is coming. It's time for that. I think it's something that I think a lot of coaches want. And we're at a place now, I think, in the playoff, particularly if the playoff expands, where coaches don't have to worry about getting to the end of the season with 0 or 1 losses to be a playoff contender, because the schedules are starting to get tougher. You're seeing more Power 5 versus Power 5 non-conference games being scheduled now. And particularly if the playoff expands, the era of the 2-loss or even a 3-loss playoff qualifier, depending on how much it eventually expands, that's coming. So I think all that kind of factors in. A 9-game conference schedule shouldn't scare anybody.
Chase, when we look at the SEC as a whole, a lot of the post-spring top 25s are out, predictions, Vegas win-loss totals. But when you look at the entirety of the Southeastern Conference entering the 2022 season, if you had to say there's one team that kind of jumps out to you that maybe those in the media or even college football fans are overlooking just based on what they have coming back and maybe the ceiling and potential, what team would that be for you?
You know, not saying Kentucky is a conference championship contender, but I do think Kentucky is a good pick to be, if you're looking at the over-unders on those win totals, and I don't know what Kentucky is, but I think they got a chance to have a pretty good season, particularly if the Levis kid at quarterback is ends up being as good as hoped. Mark Stoops has done a good job there. He's taken that program to a different level. I think they're playing on the line of scrimmage at Kentucky better than they have in a long time and more consistently now. So yeah, if you're, I'd have to look at the board obviously, but Kentucky I think's got a great chance to have a year that people are not quite expecting.
All right. Well, in Kentucky, I think they've got, they're actually listed right here, Chase, 8.5, according to Vegas Insider. I will scroll down, though, and look at Texas A&M. They are also at 8.5. So if you would like to put out some bulletin board material or be that lightning rod, does Texas A&M go over the 8.5 win total or under?
Well, my first thought on that is I think Vegas might be thinking like I'm thinking, because I would have thought Kentucky might have been 7, 7.5. 8.5 is a big number for Kentucky. Schedule obviously plays into it a whole lot, but you know, Texas A&M at 8.5, I think Jimbo's got to do that. Yeah, I think he gets to 9.
Oh, wow. Last question for me, Chase. We were both there. We covered it. LSU, Bama, the first time, the 9-6 game in which LSU got the win. Bama, of course, came back, got the revenge with the national championship down in New Orleans. That was the craziest atmosphere that I personally had seen around the stadium. Obviously, the game lived up to the billing. All of the players that were on the field, it was just an incredible night. October 8th, Texas A&M comes to town. CBS has already announced, not that that game was going to be on primetime, but just conveniently they've announced that they're going to have a primetime doubleheader. So we all anticipate that Texas A&M Bama will be played that night. What kind of atmosphere do you anticipate? I know it's May. We got a lot of time. Texas A&M might not be very good when they get to Tuscaloosa, but just your thoughts on that game being in primetime at Bryant-Denny.
Ticket brokers are going to love it, aren't they? They're going to be
amazing.
They're going to be charging more money for that game on the secondary ticket market than the Iron Bowl or any other game you want. Any other game you want on the schedule, especially if both teams are unbeaten going in, that's going to be the hottest ticket of the season. So that thought comes to mind. I know somebody who's got Alabama season tickets, and sometimes the guy, and he typically sells them, but sometimes he tells me, some years it's good to sell it as a package, and some years it's good to split it up. And after the Saban Jimbo debacle of last week, I talked to him. I said I'd split them up this year.
That would be a good idea.
Chase, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for taking time, and Destin should be a whole lot of fun next week.
Sounds good, fellas.
Thank you. Chase Goodbread, the Tuscaloosa News sports columnist there. You can follow him on Twitter, at Chase Goodbread. He joins us on the Bud Light Hotline. Carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste. When there's fun, Bud Light is there.
Man, he just will not be quiet. I'm not talking about Jimbo Fisher. Lane Kiffin gives an interview to Sports Illustrated. No, he's not talking about the kerfuffle that's going on between Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. He does have a comment about the Alabama quarterback and Heisman Trophy winner. We'll tell you what he said. Interesting thought process with Lane Kiffin. Always is. We'll tell you about it when we come back on Three Man Front.
Three Man Front. Weekdays.
Right here on Jax.
Jax 94.5.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.